hustlers, you stone foxes, you mean dudes. Watch out. The Godfather of Harlem is doing it again. There's only one stud who could rip off New York, ruin Rome, and stay alive to run a number in Africa.
Like stealing candy from a baby.
Super strong, supernatural, and
the baddest cat that ever walked the earth.
Damn, brother, you have become one violent dude.
I might not be the baddest man in the world, but I'm in the top two, and my father is getting old.
Pornography presented by Santa Sugar.
His business is pleasure. He sells the soft stuff.
Rated R. It's nasty.
Hello and welcome to Podnography. In this week's show, number 3, I'm going to be taking a look, as usual, at the past week in Fleshbot. Or at Fleshbot. Why in Fleshbot? If there was a Fleshbot, though, it would probably be some kind of sexy robot, and then you'd want to be in it, or at least I would. So I'm going to be taking a look at Fleshbot and what's been going on. I'm going to be talking to sex blogger Mackenzie, and I'm also going to be talking to you guys a little about this show and what we might do to make it better, although it's already wonderful, as I'm sure you know. Now, before I start on the last week at Fleshbot, I have to say that there have been a number of articles recently that have referenced sex podcasting. And as you may or may not know, back at sugarbank.com, which is my blog, I wrote an article called How to Make Money in Podcasting If You're Not Mark Curry quite a while ago, and it was brilliant and funny, and it changed a lot of lives. And following that article, very similar pieces appeared in both the New York Times and the Wall Street Journals referencing sex podcasting and what a big kind of explosion there could be with sex podcasting, recently followed by an article in the San Francisco Chronicle called Podnography. Blah, blah, blah. I didn't really read the rest of it. That's all I need to know. But none of these articles have referenced this show, which is shocking. So if you subscribe to the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, I suggest you write the editors a stern letter and say, hey, Podnography didn't just emerge. It didn't just happen spontaneously. No, there was a man behind it, a brain, a vision, a dream. And that man is me. So let's give credit where credit's due, and frankly, I feel that I need some love. So help me out here, people. Anyway, it was a spectacular week at Fleshbot this week, with contributions from all of the gang. The first thing that caught my attention as particularly noteworthy was a piece that Violet Blue found regarding Jennifer Connelly, who is a spectacularly attractive actress. If you have eyes, you will have noticed that. And in an interview, she talked about how she likes to do other things while she's having sex. She's a multitasker. She likes to read, she likes to surf the web, or do internet shopping specifically, and she likes to take phone calls. Now, the only way I could resolve this in my mind was thinking there are three options here. Either she is having the tamest, most boring sex with her husband, Paul Bettany, that you can imagine, and she's just trying to amuse herself. That's a sad option, but it's possible. He is English, and sometimes, you know, we're not that great in the sack, what can I say? The second option is that she is just such a freak, and Paul Bettany enjoys her on such a carnal level that they just never leave the bedroom, and that she's had to adapt her life so she can do everything that she needs to survive, including go to the bathroom. Yes, and I'm talking about lemonade and chocolate for people out there who are fans of that thing. So she's living in the bedroom. They are just fucking all the time. And because of that, she does everything, you know, while she's having sex. The third option, and this is the one that I think is most likely, is that actually she never intended to get married to Paul Bettany. I mean, let's face it, he's a good actor and he's an attractive chap, but this is Jennifer Connelly we're talking about. She should only reproduce with the assistance of enormously powerful computers and, you know, perfect specimens of male manhood collected from around the globe in white jumpsuits. Some kind of Logan's Run thing is what I'm thinking here. Anyway, I'm sure you're with me on that. So my theory is that she was drugged when she married Paul Bettany, and that in fact, while she's having sex with Paul Bettany, she doesn't know what's going on. And the computer with the broadband internet access and the books, and she probably has a mobile above her bed as well, are just to keep her distracted, because I think Paul Bettany realizes as soon as she snaps out of it, she's going to file charges and then file for divorce. The other story that caught my attention recently at Fleshbot was something about Sens, which is Benedict Taschen, he of Taschen Books, Fetish Magazine. Now, I must admit that I have done some work with Taschen in the past, so I'm not entirely unbiased here, but it's a glossy, lovely-looking magazine. Like all fetish magazines, I mean, once you've seen one fetish magazine, you've seen them all. It's just pictures of people who are really hot dressed in rubber. The only problem is, I once sold rubber, and as this podcast continues, you'll realize that I've done pretty much everything, so that's one of the reasons I'm as great as I am. But when you put on rubber clothing, you have to put talc on your skin first, otherwise the rubber sticks. And then, of course, as you're wearing rubber, you start to sweat. And the mixture of sweat and talc makes this gloopy, thick, kind of lumpy cum consistency material that covers your body when you take the rubber off, which means you really have to take a shower before you can go from wearing rubber to having sex, which kind of took the edge off the whole Sens issue 4 thing for me. But if you can avoid thinking about lumpy cum, then take a look at it. It's really very interesting. Third thing I found, or I didn't find it at all, Fleshbot found it, which is why we love Fleshbot. Jude Law has a tiny, tiny penis. Someone took a photograph of him while he's on holiday. Why celebrities take their clothes off outside their houses when they're on vacation, I don't know. Let's just, you know, send a message to celebrities. Long lenses exist. This is a technology that's been around since kind of the 1950s. They will see you. They can see you from miles away. Anyway, they saw Jude Law from miles away, and he has a tiny, tiny, tiny little penis. Now, I feel better, because obviously Jude Law is more attractive than I am, and he is therefore more loved than I am, and I worry a lot about no one loving me. But I don't feel that much better, because until recently, Jude Law had his tiny penis in Sienna Miller. And is it better to have your tiny penis in Sienna Miller, or your great big cock in your own hand, while you think about Sienna Miller? But, you know, then again, on the upside, since he stuck his acting ability into his nanny, the only tummy stick in Sienna Miller has been attached to Mike Tyson. And if you hadn't heard that, that's an exclusive. My incredibly reliable internet sources tell me that Mike Tyson and Sienna Miller are not only an item, but they're thinking of making their first porn film together. The highlight of the Fleshbot week, and it's always a tough competition, but this one just came out immediately and scooped the award, is The Hole Shooter. The Hole Shooter is a 2-inch tube of clear plastic, which the website says is high quality clear plastic, designed to allow you to view deep inside your lover. And again, to quote from their website, it specifically sets things up so that you can watch as your ejaculate travels into her body. Now, I don't know who out there is dating a woman who allows you to put a clear 2-inch plastic tube into her vagina. And if you were dating such a woman, who would then get their jollies by ejaculating outside her body and then kind of scooping it into the hole shooter so you can see your ejaculate traveling into her body? And by the way, traveling into her body, unless your ejaculate comes out with Nikes on, isn't that just watching your cum drip down the side of a plastic tube assisted by gravity? Anyway, the product is out there. So for all of you people who've been wondering about how they can get their hole shots done, we now have the technology. The last thing I found on Fleshbot this week that really made me go, hey, that's cool, I'll talk about it in the podcast, is Webmistress Vix. Now, Webmistress Vix, which, as you can probably tell, I'm having a little trouble saying, she is a woman who has a website called titsout.com. Hey, she's English. tits-out.com. And on it, she raises money for multiple sclerosis. Now, she has multiple sclerosis herself. which actually is a little difficult because it makes me feel guilty about saying Webmistress Vix really isn't that hot. If you're a big boob guy, she's got big boobs, go there. But if you're just, you know, a normal guy like me, just nice boobs, can be big, small, you know, on someone else's girlfriend, then Webmistress Vix is not super duper attractive. But she is doing it all for charity. My question is, how did a website like that get started? Is it some kind of weird insurance policy that you can have if you reach a certain level of attractiveness where they, you know, the hospital says in return for a cut from your porn site, you'll continue to get treatment? Does this mean that if we don't all go to Webmistress Vix's website right now, she's going to get sicker? Because that would be really distressing. Anyway, if you like your porn with a touch of disability, that's the place to go.
This is a giant cock.
That's how I roll.
Now, the interview you're about to hear is a little different than normal. It's a little more intellectual than the interview that you had last week with Angela Malini. And I did it with sex blogger Mackenzie, who is a very interesting young woman who is currently working on a sexually themed dissertation. Here it is. I think you're going to enjoy it. And I apologize in advance for the audio quality. As I said, technical issues this week and technical issues when I did this a couple of weeks ago. We are talking because we discovered each other via your blog, which is explorations.thumbsandknees.com. And don't worry about writing that down, listeners, because there is a link on the podnography.com website, which you can visit during, after, or before this show if you have access to any alien technologies that I don't know about. Mackenzie, tell us about the blog.
The blog is just a really fun place where I can write and I can think and I can talk to myself, and then also have the benefit of getting feedback from other people and talking to other people. So it's a place where I look at my sexual personas and say, who are these people? What are they doing in my head? What are they doing in my vulva? What's going on here? And we can chat, and it's good.
Do you have a number of sexual personas? And if so, how many are reflected in the blog?
I'm working on that, actually. It was one of the reasons I created the blog, is I ended up reading a book that said, by the way, you probably have all these sexual personas. Go find them. So far, really, the only one I found who keeps badgering me to do things is my inner stripper. But she's really the only one who keeps going, no, dude, no, you have to, do you see the buttons on that shirt? You think of what you can do with those buttons.
Is your inner stripper persona a kind of California cliche, or does she have a different take on things?
Probably more the California cliche.
So she's wearing 5-inch high clear plastic heels?
It's true. The classy ones with the dollar bills in the heel.
And she's called something like Chardonnay.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Probably ending in an I.
I'm aroused already. I'm folding my dollar bills lengthways as we speak. You have a serious academic interest in sexuality as well.
It's true. It just kind of showed up one day. My interest in sexuality previously had more been back when I was still a virgin. For some reason, I ended up being the person who knew more about sex than everyone else did. I was the one who was comfortable going to the local clinic and picking up condoms and giving them to my friends. And that meant that I had a very large knowledge base, that people came to me and were comfortable talking to me. And then it came to the point where suddenly I was that person who needed someone to go to and talk to. And I found those resources more in academia than among my peers. So I have a very personal interest in sexual academia, and also a very personal interest in sex, the way most people should.
Oftentimes when women become pro-sex advocates, mm-hmm. it's suggested that they're kind of victims of abuse, or they're inherently deviant in a way which means their opinions shouldn't be listened to. Are you worried about those kind of accusations?
I haven't experienced them at this point, much to my great luck. And part of that is that I'm at an age range where people can still say she will grow out of it. If I get to a point where people start criticizing me for being vocal, they can just go away, because I don't really like putting up with that.
Do you see turning your dissertation into a book and then a lifestyle?
It is possible. I haven't figured out what I'm doing with the rest of my life just yet. Currently, the plan is naughty librarian, but we're not really sure about that one.
You're looking at a lot of pornography, I understand, from the 70s and 80s, correct?
Mm-hmm. About 1970 to 1982. 82, 83-ish was when the VCR started getting really popular.
So you're actually looking at the period before the Meese Commission and before the Tracy Lord scandal?
Yes, before all of that, when people would still go see pornographic films in a movie theater.
What I like to call the good old days.
Yes.
What have you found looking at all of that adult material?
Mostly I've found that there are common thematic elements and little pieces that very easily get turned into political scandals or ways of phrasing women's sexual repression as opposed to sexual liberation. There's the accusation that comes from certain segments of the women's movement that, in fact, men have tricked women into believing that they could get sexual liberation through being in pornography, when really pornography is all for men. And I don't like that. So I'm kind of investigating alternative narratives and looking for the people who have written things that say, you know, this is really interesting. This was part of a development of women. This was part of the way that women got to explore their sexualities and put them out on the table. And yes, there were warpings by others, but that's the way many creative mediums are, especially when they're starting.
Are you seeing changes from the 70s to the 80s in the way that women were portrayed?
One of the things that I love about the more vintage pornography, even though it sounds silly to call something vintage that's that new, is that there are women who are not notably attractive, who are not busty or hairless or immediately classifiable into some kind of fetish, who look really ugly when they get it on. And that's something that's really changed. And you can argue that that's better or you can argue that it's worse, but the way women just look is very different.
All of this academic interest in sexuality, do you think that's tied to your personality?
Likely, yes. Just coming into it from the perspective of being the person who used to know a lot. And then I found that I love political theory, and there are very few fields of political theory that are truly ever-changing. And women's studies, or whatever you'd like to call it, feminist theory, is always changing. And there are a lot of really active arguments. So even sitting down to write now, there are new books coming out. There's new articles, new journals. And I really like how I feel like I'm not researching something that happened long before I was born.
Do you think that looking at your own sexuality changes its nature?
Yes, in many ways I think it does. Sometimes when I read certain pieces of legislation that have been crafted that are notably against people who are interested in consensual sadomasochism or bondage, I feel really personally hurt, and that means that I become much more fiercely proud of those aspects of me. I've become much more open in many ways because of the academic work that I've done.
One of the things in your blog, you made a long post of 100 things that you like that have a lot of detailed sexual information. And would it be right to think that you have a personal interest in BDSM and power exchange?
Very much so. It is one of the things that, as early as 12 years old, really held my interest. The first pornography that I discovered and began to read was bondage-oriented. It spoke to me in a lot of ways. And a lot of the things that are considered more extreme. I have a very, very strong interest in rape fantasy work in terms of my own personal sexuality, things I like to read, and really interesting in terms of, from an academic perspective, in terms of free speech.
How would you define rape fantasy?
Well, you talk about the narrative of the woman who says, no, 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 I don't want it. And the man says, come on, baby. Yes, you do. And she says, no, no, I mean it. And he says, nope, you're going to put out. And then they begin, and she realizes in the middle of it that she does indeed enjoy it. That's a really common narrative. And for some women and some men, or groups of either, they decide that that's something they would like to try. And so they sit down beforehand and they talk to each other and they say, well, this is what I'd like. I would like to feel reluctant, but then very much into it. And the other person says, well, I'd like to feel really dominating and like I'm making you. And then after they've had that conversation where they both set down their boundaries, they can pretend, essentially, that one person is taking advantage of the other. And for some people, it's really as simple as light coercion, and for others, they want to pretend that they've been kidnapped. That's very much on the edge or over it for many people in terms of acceptability.
Have you spoken to other people who have those kind of fantasies themselves?
I have.
Would you say there's any common thread that runs between people who find that appealing?
It's almost always people who like power exchange in the first place, but that's really the only common thread between it. I don't fit into a really nice, neat box with my fetishes and my sexual arousal. I wasn't sexually abused. I never had issues as a child, anything that would give a psychiatric explanation as to why these things interest me now. So it's very interesting to find out that there is no mold for this at all.
Have you ever met anyone who's experienced rape, who has rape fantasies?
I have never met anyone who is interested in rape fantasy who has told me they have experienced rape. It doesn't mean that I haven't, but I'm not sure.
If someone was to make that revelation, would it affect the way that you view their fantasy?
In some ways, yes. There are people who enjoy blood play, who like lightly or heavily cutting another person and the blood that results, or pretending to, or what have you. And for some people who are self-mutilists, that behavior is not healthy because it's taking the self-mutilation and giving it to another person, and you're still using it as a psychological aid. For someone who's undergone rape and has not been able to get beyond that and hasn't healed and feel fully healed, that would not be emotionally healthy for them. But for some people, I could see how it would be cathartic to be able to sit down and plan it and say, this is what I want from this experience. And there is something empowering about that there.
It's an interesting point of view. Regarding your blog and the details of your own sexuality that you put up there, are you worried about giving people a blueprint to get into your knickers?
I'm very rarely worried about people getting into my knickers. I would be a lot more worried, I feel, if I was not with a long-term partner or if I was on the prowl.
What does your partner think of your blog?
He's basically made it pretty clear that he doesn't much care about it. It's kind of refreshing. It's like, have you read it? Oh, I check it every once in a while. You don't post much. It's like, thanks, honey. Love you.
What would you hope that people reading your blog will get from it?
From the personal warm fuzzy perspective, that they are not alone. From a more academic perspective, that you can be a well thought, interesting, smart person and have conflicting views about your own sexuality, and also tastes that are not necessarily vanilla in nature, and that that doesn't change the fact that you are a human being who has something to contribute.
Do you think that vanilla exists?
Sometimes yes and sometimes no. Most of the time, no. Even now, vanilla sex will sometimes include handcuffs.
And driving someone around in the boot of an old Cadillac for a couple of hours just to, you know, soften them up. But that's a whole other story. One of the things that blogs are doing are making a public record of people's thoughts and feelings that hasn't previously existed. Can you see a time in the future when the fact that what you've written on your blog you can't get back and now belongs to the public will be something you regret?
I don't know. I think if I ever decide to run for public office, it'll become a problem. The way I've started thinking about it is that I am at a very short period of my life. Until I turn about 28, I can say, oh, you know how those years are. She couldn't help herself. You make such rash decisions at that age, and I can get away with that.
Do you think that there's any possibility that you'll be drawn into the adult industry yourself?
It's so tempting. It is something I am considering. It is something I have considered for a very long time, as it does hold a certain amount of interest for me. And for me, this was my way of starting to see how being a sexual person in a public sense felt. And we'll keep it up, and if I continue feeling comfortable, and then I start feeling like it's not enough and itching for more, we'll see how I feel about that then. For now, I'm very much happy just writing and exploring that side of myself.
Have you considered the fact that some of the people judging your dissertation might discover your blog and connect you with it?
Quite possibly, yes. I mean, one of my academic advisors for my writing is the professor who encouraged me to look at pornography in the first place. So I'm not particularly worried about what he would think.
And the professor that introduced you to pornography wasn't immediately arrested?
No, not at all. We didn't actually watch any in class. We just read a lot about it.
He doesn't have a popcorn night at his house on Wednesdays where he gets a lot of grad students over and he puts on some skin flicks.
I wish he did, because he's pretty cute, but can't do anything about it.
As soon as you publish, my academic advisor's pretty cute on the blog, you'll see your grades start to rocket up.
It's true. And then I'll see his partner show up at my house and start beating the crap out of me.
Although, of course, that could be seen as a consensual rape fantasy. And, you know, if someone shoots it, we could be talking about an AVN award somewhere in your future. Mackenzie, thank you so much for taking the time to talk. I apologize for my lack of focus and my rather weak interviewing skills, but I'm sure everyone is going to realize that you're fascinating and I'm just the guy with a big mouth and a podcast.
Thank you very much, Sam.
It's a pleasure. Well, your blog is exploration.thumbsandknees.com. If someone was taking a first trip to visit your blog, what would you recommend they take a look at?
Go ahead and take a look at the list of 100 things I like. If you are interested in just a real laundry list of the kind of person I am, that's a good place to start. Also, if you're looking to see how kind of where I'm coming from in the sexual front, looking at my first time, which is the story of how I lost my virginity, would be another good place to start.
Thanks, Mackenzie. I appreciate your time. It's a great blog, and I look forward to seeing a lot more from it.
I'm ready to shoot now. My cock is ready. I want to fuck. Let's go.
Now, on another note entirely, I've been trying to think about how to make this podcast a little more dynamic. You can probably tell there's been a slight change in format this week, and that's because I've had some enormous technical problems. Just mind-numbingly boring technical problems, which I think will be fixed for next week. Anyway, up until this point, I've been doing a review each week, and I'd like to keep doing a review this each week, but I'd like to kind of mix it up a bit, and I'd like to have someone to talk to. So, if you have a good voice, and particularly if you're a woman, because I think a woman would work better for this than a man, I'm sorry, men, then send me an email to podnography@gmail.com and include an audio file of your voice, and maybe we'll find someone who can do a kind of Siskel and Ebert type deal on the review section, because I think that would be fun. Of course, as always, send an email to podnography@gmail.com if you have anything on your mind, anything I can help you with, or just any general porn questions. Well, thanks for listening. That was Podnography for this week. Make sure to check out fleshbot.com every day for news from the world of sex, sexuality, and pornography filtered through a technological window. And to hear more of my ramblings, go to sugarbank.com. And be sure to check out sugarhive.org if you have anything to say or anything you'd like to find out about all things sexual.